In 1850, the United States stood at a crossroads, facing a national crisis that threatened to tear the country apart. The issue of slavery had reached a boiling point, as the nation struggled with how to reconcile the moral, political, and economic divisions between North and South. The compromise forged that year, the Compromise of 1850, was an attempt to stave off the impending conflict, to preserve the Union, and to balance the interests of both free and slave states in a rapidly expanding nation. It was a temporary truce in the battle over slavery, but it was also a reflection of the deep, irreconcilable differences that would eventually lead to the Civil War. The seeds of the Compromise of 1850 were sown in the wake of the Mexican-American War, which had ended just 2 years earlier. The war resulted in the Mexican Cession, a massive territorial acquisition that added vast swaths of land to the United States, including present-day California, Arizona, and New Mexico. The question that immediately arose was whether slavery would be permitted in these new territories. For the North, which was largely anti-slavery, the extension of slavery into the new territories was unacceptable. For the South, which depended on slavery for its agrarian economy, the ability to expand slavery westward was crucial for maintaining political and economic power. The debate over the status of these new territories was further complicated by the issue of California's admission to the Union. California, having rapidly grown in population due to the gold rush of 1849, sought statehood. However, it was a free state, and its admission would tip the balance in favor of free states in the Senate, further alarming Southern leaders. The South felt that it was already losing political power in the federal government, and the admission of California as a free state seemed like the final blow to their way of life. Amidst this growing crisis, President Zachary Taylor, who had succeeded James K. Polk in 1849, sought to address the issue with a hardline stance. Taylor was a Southern slave owner, but he also wanted to preserve the Union. His approach was to admit California as a free state and to leave the question of slavery in the remaining territories to be decided by popular sovereignty, essentially allowing the people of each territory to decide for themselves whether to permit slavery. Taylor's proposal, however, was met with fierce resistance from Southern leaders who believed it was too favorable to the North and would undermine their power. It was clear that the political deadlock over slavery could not be resolved by one party or one region alone. The nation needed a new approach, and it came in the form of Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky, who had already played a central role in shaping the Missouri Compromise of 1820. Clay, often referred to as the Great Compromiser, proposed a series of measures designed to address the grievances of both the North and South. The result was the Compromise of 1850, a package of five laws aimed at maintaining the delicate balance between free and slave states. The first and most significant part of the compromise was the admission of California as a free state. This was a major victory for the North, as it preserved the free state majority in the Senate. However, to appease the South, the compromise included a second provision, the creation of a new and more stringent Fugitive Slave Act. This law required that escaped slaves be returned to their owners, even if they had fled to a free state. The law was fiercely opposed in the North, where many saw it as an immoral infringement on the rights of free people, and it led to widespread resistance, including the creation of Underground Railroad networks to help slaves escape to Canada. In addition to the Fugitive Slave Act, the Compromise of 1850 also included the establishment of territorial governments in the lands acquired from Mexico. The question of whether slavery would be allowed in these territories, New Mexico and Utah, was to be determined by popular sovereignty, a principle that allowed the settlers of each territory to vote on the issue. This was a concession to the South, which hoped to expand slavery into these regions, but it ultimately led to greater tensions and violence, particularly in Kansas. The fourth provision of the compromise dealt with the abolition of the slave trade, but not slavery itself, in Washington, D.C. This was a symbolic victory for abolitionists in the North, as it ended the public auction of enslaved people in the nation's capital. The final component of the compromise involved a boundary dispute between Texas and New Mexico. Texas, a former independent republic, had claims to a large portion of land that was part of the Mexican Cession. The compromise settled the dispute by establishing the current borders of Texas and compensating the state with $10 million, which was used to pay off its war debts. The Compromise of 1850 passed in pieces, with considerable opposition from both the North and the South. The Northern Whigs, led by figures such as Daniel Webster, supported the measures, believing that preserving the Union was more important than the issue of slavery. Southern leaders, including John C. Calhoun, vehemently opposed many aspects of the compromise, but ultimately accepted it as a temporary measure to stave off secession and war. The passage of the compromise did, for a time, bring relief to a nation teetering on the brink of crisis. However, the Compromise of 1850 was not a lasting solution. While it temporarily diffused sectional tensions, it failed to address the deeper issues that divided the country. The Fugitive Slave Act, in particular, exacerbated tensions in the North, where the moral outrage over the law led many people to become more committed to the abolitionist cause. The concept of popular sovereignty also proved to be deeply flawed. In Kansas, the principle was put into practice with disastrous results. Pro-slavery and anti-slavery settlers flooded the territory in the 1850s, leading to a violent conflict known as Bleeding Kansas. This violence was a precursor to the Civil War, as it demonstrated that attempts to let settlers decide the fate of slavery through democratic means were doomed to failure. The Compromise of 1850 also had a significant impact on the political landscape of the time. It contributed to the fragmentation of the Whig Party, which struggled to maintain unity in the face of sectional divisions. In its place, the Republican Party began to rise, particularly in the North, as a strong anti-slavery party. The Republican Party's platform, founded in 1854, would attract a coalition of abolitionists, former Whigs, and free soilers, all united in their opposition to the expansion of slavery. By the time of the 1860 presidential election, the Republican Party would be poised to win the presidency under Abraham Lincoln, a victory that would set in motion the secession of Southern states and the outbreak of the Civil War. In the final analysis, the Compromise of 1850 was not a true resolution of the issue of slavery in America. It was, instead, a temporary fix, a last-ditch effort to preserve the Union in the face of growing sectionalism. The tensions it sought to quell were only postponed, and the provisions of the compromise, particularly the Fugitive Slave Act, created more divisions than they resolved. The Compromise of 1850, though an important moment in the history of the United States, was ultimately a bridge to a far more catastrophic conflict, the Civil War.